welcome into this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, Rex, you know the expression that a star is born. Unfortunately, it doesn't even really apply in this case as it relates to Jackson Koivun and the 3M Open on the PGA Tour, because we already knew that Jackson Koivun was a star. He had the college pedigree to prove that. But now, Rex, it is clear that he has arrived after this three-shot win in Minnesota.
You can't rob him of his party. You have to give him the star has arrived treatment. I know you're absolutely right, and you cover college golf better than anyone else in the game, so I will give you your flowers on that one. However, just because you knew he was coming, you can't let everyone else just walk away without celebrating this, because this was an amazing victory for a lot of different reasons, not just for the style points that he was able to pull off. And a three-stroke victory to do it for the first time, the way he did it coming down the stretch, for Jim Nantz to announce on the 72nd tee that all he needs to do is make a seven on this hole. That's pretty cool to get your very first drive. And then he chunks the drive, which is a pretty cool moment. To do it against Scottie Scheffler, the world number one. Do it against Brian Harman, a major champion. To do it against Hideki Matsuyama. All of these players who, they have spotted him a lot of strokes, but still going into the final round, you didn't know how he was going to keep it together. You didn't know how the nerves were going to manifest itself. Give him his party. Let him celebrate. Let him make the most of this.
No, I don't mean to be dismissive for the casuals who are just now being introduced to Jackson Koivun. Like, wow, this kid is pretty good. I call it the sports center crowd, which is the mainstream sports audience, which again is really important. And that's an audience that Brian Rolapp and the PGA Tour executives are trying to tap into. They're trying to tap in to the Pat McAfee crowd and bringing in, you know, the mainstream sports fan in addition to the hardcore golf fan. And Jackson Koivun, a 21-year-old American, certainly fits that bill. It's been a long time, Rex, since we've been really this excited about a youngster, an American player, the player who did have the pedigree, who we all saw coming. It all seemed inevitable. And then to actually do it in his third start, certainly, I think, ratchets up the irrational expectations even a little bit more. I was very surprised throughout the weekend that there were not more comparisons to what happened at this exact tournament in 2019. And keep in mind, like, this is immediately where my mind went, was Matt Wolf was 20 years old at the time. It was his third start as a professional, and he beat Colin Morikawa and Bryson DeChambeau to win the inaugural 3M Open. Like, that was a signal that here I am, a really young, exciting, talented former college player who was just barely a month into his professional career, winning an event on the PGA Tour. And a year later, he was the 54-hole leader at the 2020 US Open. Like, my mind immediately went to there. And I remember the exact same excitement that I had about Matt Wolf and Kyle Morikawa. And keep in mind, although Bryson DeChambeau was a couple years removed from college and his decorated star as a NCAA champion, a US amateur champion, at that point, I believe he's a 4- or 5-time winner on the PGA Tour. It was all very exciting. Like, wow, the future of American golf looks very bright. And here we are, 7 years later. I have immediate flashbacks to 2019 3M Open, because here we have yet another 21-year-old American star in Jackson Koivun.
Is that fair? Is that a fair comparison? And look, we're going to let history and hindsight be the judge here, and I know that's not always fair when it comes to Matt Wolf.
It's an amazing comp, because Matt Wolf was 20, so a little bit younger.
But I think I'm just looking at where Matt Wolf is right now in his career, and I can't imagine 4 or 5 years from now, you and I are talking about what could have been for Jackson Koivun. I'm not going to be the prisoner of the moment here. And I know there is a lot that needs to transpire over the next 4 or 5 years of his career to get him where he wants to go, to get him to where it seems as if he's going. And that is heading straight to a Scottie Scheffler, straight to world number one, straight to winning major championships. I know that's a huge jump for someone that just got his first breakthrough. But for all the reasons that you just said, you need to start looking at this him through that lens. And I would imagine, I remember your excitement when Matt Wolf won that tournament, because not only was he really talented, not only can you get caught up in the moment, no one is the king of hyperbole like you are. However, he did it in a really fun way, and he was a fun player to cover. But now I look at it, and I wonder if it's a fair comparison, because I have a really hard time fast forwarding 4 or 5 years and seeing Jackson Koivun even close to being what Matt Wolf is today, which is essentially a shell of himself, I would argue.
I mean, at the time, there was so much hype around Matt Wolf, and you also had Justin Suh, who was in that outgoing class as well. Mm. And look, you know, Colin Morikawa has turned into a 2-time major champion, a perennial top 10 player in the world, still very competitive obviously in the year 2026. The comp is just interesting because of the parallels of a young American star who was a month removed from college and delivering on all that hype. It just so happened to be at the 3M Open as well. I do think Jackson Kooijman has way more emotional maturity than Matt Wolf did at that age. And again, not to harp on this, which we've talked about over the past couple months on this podcast, there was such an added benefit of what Jackson Kooijman did by staying an extra year at Auburn for what was his junior year of college. Keep in mind, this is a player in Jackson Kooijman who had more than double the amount of points that were necessary to earn a full PGA Tour card through the university accelerated program. He needed 20. He ended up with 42. And so he could have left after his sophomore year. He had all the accolades. He had all the hype. His game isn't all that much different. But Jackson Kooijman made the conscious decision to stay an extra year in college because he did not feel that he was necessarily emotionally ready for the week in and week out toil of PGA Tour life. It's that mature decision. It's that long-sightedness in terms of your career and trying to make this not necessarily a short-term decision and trying to have this window of opportunity from 3 to 5 years, but looking at this 20, 25 years down the road, I think that was really the benefit for Jackson Kooijman because now he's already had PGA Tour starts. He had more than a half dozen starts in the PGA Tour already because the sponsor exemptions that he's accrued over the past couple years while he was still in college. This is now his third start as a professional. He's played in major championships before. He's won national championships as a part of that Auburn team. He has done everything necessary. He has checked every single box before he joined the Play for Pay ranks, and now we've seen what he does. He is ready. He's mature. He's poised and he's capable, and he's already showing that in his limited time on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, listening to his press conference afterwards, I think you hit on the important thing. And I do want to say, I think it's kind of cute that it wasn't that long ago that I think you and I were actually doing this on this podcast, which is strange because we normally wouldn't have done this. But after Auburn wins the national championship, I think we at least, I don't think either one of us were leaning into the idea that maybe he should have stayed an amateur, at least through the Open Championship, because he still had an exemption to Royal Birkdale and then turned pro after that. I think my argument against that was, it's such an important season. It's so important for him to get inside that top 70, which, by the way, he moved to 70 on the FedEx Cup points list with the playoffs just 2 weeks away, which is huge for him. He's going to play next week. I'd imagine he's going to play the Wyndham Championship. So it seems like a silly conversation now. I even think there was an argument in general sports media about maybe he goes back to Auburn. I know that was the idea. Maybe they go back and try to get the repeat and everything. That seems kind of silly now for all the reasons that you pointed out. Yes. Could have made a really good argument at the end of his sophomore year that he needed one more year of seasoning and then maybe one more year in Auburn. It's fun. It's fun for everybody. It's certainly fun for a star golfer who has all this future in front of him. But I do find it fascinating that just a few weeks ago we were having this conversation. But I was taken by the idea in his post-round interview today, and they asked him what his greatest asset was, asked him what his greatest strength was. And I had to scribble it down because it was mental toughness. And that's the only way you can describe, you can point out how he just blew the field away strokes gain approach. First in the field by more than a stroke over number two on that list. First in the field over Scotty Scheffler, who usually puts up Scotty Scheffler type numbers in that category. And he blew him away by 4.5 strokes. So you get an idea of how prolific he was with his iron play. He also putted really well, but it is his mental toughness. If you look at what he did on Sunday, again, you can't stress this enough. I know that he was not paired with Scotty Scheffler. I know it's not as though he was looking over his shoulder, but he heard it from the crowd. Like he even said, so Scotty's coming for you. Scotty's coming after you. Everyone from the crowd was telling him this. He knew that I can't look over my shoulder because that guy's going to do something special and run me down. And even Scotty, who we're going to get into in just a minute, acknowledged the fact that, look, man, I did everything I could. I didn't leave anything out there. I had two bad nines over the course of 4 days. Sometimes that's going to happen. But that young man played an incredible 4 days of golf and didn't just beat a world-class PGA Tour field. He lapped it, I would argue. And it's because of how mental tough he is.
Yeah, I want to get into that projection later on and just why he is such an exciting prospect to, I think, you know, you can talk about the President's Cup and future Ryder Cup teams and major championship.
Oh, there we go. President's Cup already.
And beyond. But if we're focusing strictly on what happened Sunday at the 3M, I think you're exactly right as it relates to his mental toughness, his mental acuity, how poised he was in that really difficult spot on Sunday. Keep in mind, Jackson Kooijman was leading by 3 shots after that third round 61. came home in 28, had a pair of eagles. I think everyone was curious how he was going to handle the nerves. So obviously, we knew the college pedigree. He'd won plenty of golf tournaments. He had the single career record at Auburn with 11 career victories. He had not necessarily won an individual title at Auburn. He had not won a U.S. amateur title while at Auburn. However, he had been in so many big spots, and yet here he was in just his third start as a professional in the biggest spot imaginable. Rex, in the opening hole, pipes a drive down the middle of the fairway and stuffs it to a little more than a foot, the closest approach the entire week. That signaled to me like, okay, I'm here. I might be nervous. I might be anxious. Might be a little bit antsy, but I still have the goods. The distance control was still going to be good. He ended up ripping off three birdies in his first six or seven holes, and I think it was actually quite comfortable. And for the round, he missed just a single fairway, and he missed just three greens while staving off the world number one in Scottie Scheffler. As I mentioned, he had the dart on one. He had the par saves on 9 and 14 that I thought were crucial to really maintain that advantage. And throughout the day, when everyone was expecting a run, when everyone is expecting a 21-year-old to wobble, he never led by fewer than 2 shots, birdied all the holes that he needed to, and just kept giving himself good look after good luck. And even the putts that he did miss for birdie seemed to grace the edge. I mean, this was an absolute clinic in how to close out a golf tournament, shooting a bogey-free 66, including a nice little 15-footer on the last after a pretty shaky hole on 18 as well. I mean, this is a clinic on how to close out a golf tournament, and he's doing it at the age of 21, which has to be really exciting for his prospects.
I'm going to put Fred on his toes right now. Fred, I'm going to call 9.4 is what I'm calling for now. That's the par putt that Lav referenced. That was 14 and a half feet. That's the longest putt he made all day long. And he talked about it in the post game afterwards about how crucial that was. And it gives you the mindset of someone who's in his early 20s, playing essentially in the first couple of days. This was his third PGA Tour event as a member. He's still getting his feet around him, but he knows in that moment, with that group of players behind me, specific Scottie Scheffler, if I make a bogey here, that's going to be the crack in the door. I loved hearing from Scottie on Saturday night when he was asked about what do you feel like you have to do going into Sunday. And Scottie was focused on who was second, because he knows there's nothing I can do when it comes to Jackson. Like, I can't shoot a low enough number if he goes out and shoots something in red figures. He has to come back to us. He was an opportunity for Jackson Corbin to be a 21-year-old. To falter a little bit, to be a rookie on the PGA Tour, all of the things that we anticipate. And he made such a big putt in that moment. And the fact he recognized it. Most of the time, young talent doesn't realize they're young talent. Most of the time, young talent in this situation doesn't realize they're doing something special. In that moment, he knew exactly what he had to do, and he executed.
And as you mentioned to Rex, like, there was a little bit of wobbles over the past hour. I mean,
the driver on 18 was definitely
the golf tournament. It was clearly thin, a thin tee shot on 17 as well. Did not strike that one particularly well. His speed control, I would say from 14 on, got a little bit dodgy. He raced one pass on 14. He left one, raced one pass on 14, left one short on 15. It just became a little bit uncertain as the nerves and the expectation of, oh, wow, I'm mere holes, mere minutes away from completing a lifelong dream. I think it was certainly understandable. But the par saves on 9 and 18, to me, that was Tiger-esque. That was Scottie-esque. That was knowing how important it is when you have a lead to shoot a bogey-free final round and put so much pressure on your opponents to come out and get them. I think that was huge. You could see the fist pumps on 9 and even just the satisfaction. I mean, as you mentioned, he could have made a 7 on 18, but the satisfaction of closing out with a par after a pretty skittish final hole, holding that 15-footer, delivering the emphatic fist pump, allowing him to have that moment on the edge of the green, head in hands, really coming to grips with what he'd accomplished. You could tell just how important those par saves were. And I think the importance overall of just having a bogey-free, blemish-free final round when you are in that position should really serve him well in the future.
Well, and you pointed out the par save on 18. It was gutsy in as much as it allowed him to set the tournament record, but he won by 3 strokes. So that one really doesn't factor in. I think 9 and probably 14 are the two that I would point out, simply because in the moment, he recognized this is a huge deal. We have a colleague, Doug Ferguson. At the end of the year, he does something really cool. I think both of us really appreciate when he does a column and kind of points out all 14 clubs in the bag, the best shots hit over the course of a PGA Tour season with each club. So driver all the way down to putter. And at the end of every season, there's always like a three wood. It seems like that he's struggling to dig up, because very rarely do you end up with a three wood. And then as soon as he hit that three wood, Jackson hit that three wood on, I believe it was Saturday afternoon on number 12. And he hit it 305 yards to 12 feet and made the putt. Not that that really matters, but made the eagle putt. I sent him the clip and I go, you can stop looking right now, because that has to be the best three wood of the year. And I would say as well, it was a combination of that mental toughness and doing all of the little things that you pointed out. He only missed one fairway during the final round. There was never really a moment when it seems like if you're a Scottie Scheffler or a Brian Harman or Hideki Matsuyama who were trying to find some crack in the door, he never gave it. He played like a veteran.
That's a great call on the three wood on 12 in the third round. Producer Fred, I'm sure you're making note of that one as well. It was a 280 something yard drive, and he comes back with a three wood that
305.
He had 305 to the flag, hit it to 12 feet, made one of two eagles in that final, in that third round, which led to a Saturday 61. And again, that three-shot lead. And I think that leads to a larger discussion, Rex, of why Jackson Koivun has been such a hyped prospect over the past couple years. And it wasn't really even necessarily what he was doing in college, but he's just had the pedigree for the past half decade or so. And you look at Data Golf, or friends at Data Golf who are friends of the program, Jackson Koivun is the highest-ranked amateur player that they have charted since 2010, and that keeps in mind the college events, top amateur events, clearly his professional starts. Like, we're talking about elite company who was during that time. I mean, that's Jordan Spieth, that's Justin Thomas, that's John Rahm, that's Scottie Scheffler, that's Ludwig Åberg. I mean, these are the best players that we've seen on the PGA Tour over the past decade, and Jackson Koivun was higher ranked, according to Data Golf, than all of them. And so here's the irrational part of the program. Where are you willing to go with Jackson and what he's capable of accomplishing at this point? Because again, 21 years old, third start as a pro, and he's beating a field that includes the world number one Scottie Scheffler, who couldn't chase him down with a Sunday 63.
I mean, we started this with the hype is very well justified. I don't think either one of us are going overboard on this one. And my guess is there will be a lot of folks who go overboard on the next few days when it comes to Jackson Koivun's ceiling on the PGA Tour. I think based on his pedigree as an amateur, as a college player, and based on what he's done in a very, very short window as a PGA Tour member, it's not unrealistic to sit here and think of him as a top five player. I'm not willing to go much further than that, because anything beyond that is speculative to the extreme, where suddenly you're putting him in company of your Rory McIlroys or your Tiger Woods's, and that seems ridiculous at this point in his career.
The
Scottie Schefflers. Let's see what happens when he gets a season or two under his belt, when he's had a chance to play a couple of majors and give himself an opportunity to play there. I'm not saying that he can't reach that type of potential. Right now, it's really easy to see him as a top five player. I'm not willing, you always want to jump on this bandwagon as well. I'm not even willing to put him on the President's Cup team quite yet this year. Three more starts. He's 51st on the U.S. points list. Let's don't get too crazy on this one. He'd have to pass over a lot of guys. I think that's ridiculous. But he has three starts to change that narrative. The two regular season events, and assuming he gets into the Memphis playoff event, which it looks like he will right now, and maybe he does make a statement, but I don't think anything is too far. I guess where I would want to turn this conversation, and I think you and I both have been on board with the idea that the PGA Tour University program has been a wild success. You look at some of the players who have broken through onto the PGA Tour. Ludwig Åberg has been an example of why the PGA Tour needed to do this, and it took them a long time to get here, but why this program is important. The other side of that, though, when you look at the other players who are in that category right now, alongside him playing this season on the PGA Tour under the PGA Tour U program, it's Luke Clanton, it's Gordon Sargent, it's Ben James. Now, to be fair, Ben James has only made six starts under that program because he just
and he was a 36 hole leader in Canada.
He was. I was there. I remember very well. And David Ford. I would point out that all four of those players now rank outside the top 120 on the FedEx Cup points list. I think the reason I bring this up is only to point out that what Jackson Koivun has done in a very short window is special even by these standards. Just to be able to earn your tour card and to get that pathway directly from college to the PGA Tour is special. It shows you how you're a consistent player. It shows you how you stacked up to your peers. But of those five players that I just named, just one of them has delivered on that talent and done it in a very quick manner.
However, my counter to that would be that this appears to be a pretty special class that just entered the pro ranks. Ben James, as I mentioned, was a 36-hole leader at the Canadian Open.
Six starts.
Looks like he's going to be around for a very, very long time. Tommy Morrison, the monstrous 6'9" player from the University of Texas, just won, just this very week, on the Korn Ferry Tour. 21-year-old, a teammate of Jackson Kuiven's on the Walker Cup team a year ago as well. So it looks like he's going to be on the PGA Tour. All he has done in his four starts on the Korn Ferry Tour, again, that's where he was sent as the number six player in the PGA Tour University rankings, top tens in all three Korn Ferry Tour events before blowing away the field that included Blades Brown, the 19-year-old phenom on the Korn Ferry Tour as well. So it does look like this is going to be a special class. I will say one of the added benefits and the underrated benefit, I would say, of the PGA Tour University program is prior to the introduction of this program, all of these hotshot amateurs would essentially have a 7-tournament max, right? Like that was the maximum number of sponsor exemptions that were allowed as a non-member. And so all of these hotshots would come out, they would turn professional after the NCAA championship in late May, early June, and then they would have 7 starts before the end of the PGA Tour season to make enough hay to keep their PGA Tour card for the following season. Otherwise, they were going to be relegated for the Korn Ferry Tour or worse and just sort of try to make their way through an apprenticeship that way. The benefit of this PGA Tour University program, which Ben James is going to have because he was the number one in that program, and now Jackson Kuiven prior to winning would have as a member of this accelerator program, was that they're essentially going to have, Rex, a year and a half of a runway of a full PGA Tour card. It's essentially they were number 51 on the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup standings. They could pick and choose their schedule of the full field events on the PGA Tour. They would know exactly where they're going to be playing. They would know what the perks and benefits and exemption caddies are going to be. They're going to learn how to travel as a professional, learn these golf courses, make friends, socialize, understand the toil and the exercise regimen, the practice regimen leading into tournaments, and just traveling, and how many weeks in a row do you like to play? Like all of these added benefits that regular full-fledged PGA Tour members experience. Now these guys get to have it as opposed to having these spot starts with all of the pressure of trying to earn enough money and trying to earn enough PGA Tour FedEx Cup points in that limited window and really what was going to be two and a half months max. And so being able to gift these guys who are uber talented and have proven it at the college and amateur level, a year and a half of runway with being able to have reduced expectations and just a little bit less stress because you do have the added benefit of a year and a half. I think that's a huge, huge part of the PGA Tour University program and why I think we're going to see more and more players like a Ludvig, like a Michael Thorbjørnsen, like a Jackson Kuiven and Ben James, have success and have sustained success as opposed to just sort of being flash in the pans.
One of our old colleagues at Golf Week magazine, Jeff Rood, wrote a column about this years and years ago. And I think the gist of the column was that the PGA Tour had a tendency of eating its young when it came to this particular issue because of that system that you just pointed out. Because once the NCAAs ended and a player decided to turn pro, you're right. It was a 7-event stretch. It was a 7-event sprint to try to get to a PGA Tour card. And more times from not, it was not successful. More times than not, that player ended up going to Q school or playing a year on the Korn Ferry Tour or working their way out that way. And it was a system that worked, but was far from perfect. This system, again, I wouldn't say is perfect, especially going into 2028 and what we don't know about these players. Will they make the jump directly to tier one, to the championship series, or will they have to jump to tier two and then work their way up? That seems like the more likely option right there. There's nothing wrong with that. Because if you're a talented enough player, as Jackson Kuiven proved on Sunday at the 3M Open, you're going to break through. There's nothing that's going to hold you back if you're talented enough. But this program has created, you're right, the perfect runway that if you're talented and you have this runway, that you're going to get to that potential so much faster.
I mean, John Rahm was able to do it in the sponsor exemption, and he did it really quickly.
I mean, so like, many players did it. Yeah.
But Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka were among those who could have benefited from this program. Again, Jordan Spieth ended up making it the following year, but that was sort of a mixed match of sponsor exemption on the PGA Tour, some Korn Ferry Tour success as well. Brooks Koepka, who again was a really solid college player, solid if unspectacular, had to go the challenge route on the European Tour and sort of cut his teeth that way. Did it make him the player that he eventually became? He would argue yes, but certainly the pathways could have been different for Brooks Koepka a couple of years, actually more than a decade at this point ago. What I heard you say, Rex, was that you expect Jackson Koivun to be a world number one player to win 19 majors over the next decade. I will say that he is a really exciting player to project because unlike some of the players that we've seen come out in recent years, I'm thinking of Gordon Sargent, I'm thinking of Luke Clanton, I'm thinking of Michael Thorbjornsson, Jackson Koivun is not really built on distance and speed. He has enough power. He's never going to lead, you know, PGA Tour's strokes gained off the tee rankings, but he's I think he's plenty long enough. I call him above average at this point. We talked about the three wood that he hit over 300 yards in the third round. In the right conditions, he's going to be able to keep up with some of his PGA Tour peers. But his game is really built on accuracy, precision, approach play, and he's one of the best putters imaginable. You talk to any of his college coaches, you talk to any of the players that he's beaten at the junior, amateur, and college level, and even now that they're experiencing on the PGA Tour, the guy absolutely fills it up from everywhere. And in that respect, being an elite iron player and an otherworldly putter, he does remind me of early stages Jordan Spieth. It might not have the flair for the dramatic. He might not have some of the theatrical elements. But you're talking about strength of his game. Jordan Spieth, in his heyday, early 2010s, was a phenomenal iron player and obviously just an otherworldly putter. Jackson Koivun certainly reminds of that because he's just built a little bit different than some of these modern players. And I think that's going to be exciting to watch.
It's such a small sample size right now, so I don't even think this is fair. I don't know that Jackson Koivun has that flair where he's going to hit it 50 yards offline and find a way to get up and down. We spent a long time at Birkdale talking about what Jordan Spieth had done last time we were there. I don't see him doing that, but again, this is a really small sample size, but I like that. I also like the idea that he's working with our friend of the program, Josh Gregory, on his short game, on the mental side of it, what he jotted on his glove, I thought was really fascinating. One of the words was dominate. And it wasn't the way he quickly explained it, and it really unraveled the idea that is he being dismissive of playing with the top players in the world, including world number one Scottie Scheffler? And that wasn't it at all. It was, I need to push myself to see how good I can get to be dominant. This isn't me thinking I could dominate all of these players. This is part of that process. And that, in that explanation, I heard a little bit of Scottie Scheffler. I heard a little bit that, look, I love winning. This is going to be fun. I'm going to enjoy this. And you can certainly see what it meant to Jackson when he won on the 18th green. But he seems to be one of those players that enjoys the journey. And those seem to be built for the long term.
I mean, he just has such an impressive pedigree. His accomplishments, especially at a time with college and amateur golf, and we're going to talk about Miles Russell here in a little bit, when guys are more prepared than ever before, just the competition, the golf courses they're playing, the fields, the training, the optimization, like all of it is really moving in the same direction. And here we have popped up a player of the ages, potentially, who is already winning for the third time. And you look at what he had already done on the PGA Tour, Rex, he has now made 8 starts, 6 of his last 8 starts on the PGA Tour were 11th or better. He's already proven it. Even before he turned professional, he was capable of playing against the very best players on the PGA Tour. And now, like, imagine what he's going to be capable of doing with more experience, with more composure, with just being generally settled and comfortable and not seeing these golf courses for the very first time. I think, you know, 2027 and beyond, just getting more comfortable and settled and seeing these players on a regular basis. Obviously, the arrow is pointed up, and you could be looking at a multiple-time winner each season on the PGA Tour.
And I think that's fair, and you had fun pointing out that he's going to be a generational player. We should just put him on Mount Rushmore right now. And 19 majors, why are we stopping there? Let's just give him 22 majors. Let's make it a round number. No, I think the important thing to point out is it's how he's doing it. to your point. He's doing it with a sustainable game, doing it with iron play. There's a reason why Scottie Scheffler has been so consistent over the course of the last five seasons. It's because he doesn't get on putting hot streaks and wins a couple of times and then sort of fades into the background for a couple of events. That's not the MO for him. And that doesn't seem like it's going to be the MO for Jackson Koivun. He is a very good putter. Mentally, he's very strong, but you just don't know, I guess would be how I would put a bow on this conversation, that life can get in the way sometimes of being the world's best player or trying to be the world's best player. And not, I don't even mean in a bad way. Yes, of course, injury is always something professional athletes need to keep an eye on, but sometimes in a good way. Sometimes you get married. Sometimes you get perspective. Sometimes
he's 21.
No, I'm with you 100%. But we have seen it. They were talking about that class of 2011, and you were very invested in that class of 2011. Mm. And it has been interesting to sit back and look at how that class has sort of ebbed and flowed. And I would argue that Justin Thomas's career has been beyond impressive because of the consistency, despite the injuries that he has had. Jordan Spieth, despite sort of the lapses in his game that we have seen. But we've also seen how life has gotten in the way, whether that's injury or marriage or children or whatever the case may be. So it's really hard to sit here and chart a course for a 21-year-old that just won for the first time on the PGA Tour. But certainly, if you look at the graph, it's only going in one direction.
I had an opportunity to write a book about the class of 2011. This would have been like 6 or 7 years ago at this point. I might have to circle back because it really is an interesting crop of characters. And again,
you turned that down. You said no to that offer.
The idea of writing a book is very daunting and very time consuming, which I cannot fathom right now with two young children. But if you're new to this story, when I worked for Golf Week magazine, I was following like junior and amateur golf at the time. And we did a top 10 player ranking for the high school class of 2011. And at the time I put Patrick Rogers as my number one player. And I felt really good about it at the time. And yet here he is. He's had a great PGA, or I should say he's had a very solid PGA Tour career. And yet as we sit here on June 27th, the year of our Lord 2026, Patrick Rogers has not yet won on the PGA Tour. While Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Xander Schauffele are all destined for the World Golf Hall of Fame at one point, and I did not have them as a top player in the class. I want you to get ratioed, Rex, because there was a point you made about 10 minutes ago where you said you would not put Jackson Koivun on the U.S. President's Cup team at this juncture. And keep in mind, we still have a couple events for qualifying. We have two more regular season events on the PGA Tour at this point. As you mentioned, he's 70th in the FedEx Cup standings. That would be the cutoff for the first playoff event. The team will be finalized after the BMW. So we have four events remaining. And then
if Captain he qualifies.
Captain Brant Snedeker would then make six
Brant Snedeker would make six
captain selections for that American team. Are you saying, Rex, that you would not put 21-year-old Jackson Koivun on an American team that has not lost since the 90s?
At 51st on the U.S. points list? No, I would not. And again, he's got four events to change my mind.
Of course he's 51st in the points list. He's made three starts as a professional.
No, I would not put him on the team right now. Again, he's got four starts to change my mind, and he may very well change my mind at the way he's going. He may very well change. I think you called him Brett. I don't know who Brant Snedeker is. You did not. You whiffed on it the first time. It's Brant Snedeker. Mm-hmm. Captain Snedeker is probably going to give him a hard look. But right now, my guess is the U.S. team is pretty much locked in. And he'd have to do something very special. I'm not saying he needs to get inside the top
12. Do something very special, as in win a golf tournament at the age of 21 in your third start while beating a field that included world number one Scottie Scheffler. That's great.
He's got right now guaranteed three more events, maybe four more events to change my mind and my guess the captain's mind as well. But no, not at 51st in the world right now. I would not put him on the team.
Oh my!
Would
God.
You? No, no. Yes. I want you to get ratioed.
Of course,
now.
I would. There of course, is. I would put Jackson Koivun unless the wheels somehow completely fall off over the next couple of weeks, which I'm not anticipating that they're going to do so. Of course, Brant Snedeker, the American captain, has to at least give him a shot. You think over the recent history, Rex, over the past half decade or so of team competitions, how beneficial it could be to have a player of this ilk be brought into the fold. I'm thinking Scottie Scheffler at Whistling Straits for that 2021 U.S. team and how much it meant for him. At the time, he wasn't even a PGA Tour winner for him to get the vote of the captains and the vice captains and the players on the team saying, I want you on that team, how monumental that was for Scotty Scheffler to have the season that he did in 2022. And we see what he's eventually become. Ludvig Åberg, a great example of that as well, just a couple months removed from his decorated college career at Texas Tech. What European captain Luke Donald saying, I want you to be on this team. Go out and prove that you can do it. Winning on the DP World Tour, but not yet at that level on the PGA Tour. Stars in Rome has now become a fixture in the top 10 in the world rankings, a fixture of major championships, a fixture on that European Ryder Cup team as well. I think the issue, as you correctly point out, is who would you leave off on that American team? Don't really care. Find a spot for him. This is building not just for
find
this
a spot for him. That's yes. Your answer to everything.
The goal,
a spot for him.
The goal is to win right now. And obviously the Americans have that team against a severely undermanned and shorthanded international squad. They should be able to beat them regardless of whether or not Jackson Koivun is on this team. But this is a great opportunity for Team USA leadership. And you're trying to build continuity from the President's Cup to the Ryder Cup to let this kid know that we believe in you. Find a spot for him. You got 12 spots on the team. Six are going to be already accounted for with the automatic qualifiers. Make sure that he's on that squad.
To be clear, I think Jackson Koivun is going to be on a lot of American teams, whether that's Ryder Cup or President's Cup.
So let's start now.
Right now at 51st, if the deadline comes and Captain Snedeker has to make a decision, then no, he's not going to pick him at 51st. No.
I'm looking right now, and these President's Cup standings have not been updated through the 3M Open. Right now, if you're looking at numbers 7 through 12, because again, there's going to be six wildcard picks for Captain Brant Snedeker. Right now, it's Chris Goddard, J.J. Spaun, Wyndham Clark, Justin Thomas, Xander Schauffele, and Akshay Bhatia. Chris Goddard is a Player of the Year candidate. He is going to be on that President's Cup team. It's going to be great to see him as well. That'll be the first time he's been in U.S. team competition. Wyndham Clark, the reigning U.S. Open champion at number 9, even if he is at that position in the standings, he is going to be on that team as well, just like Chris Goddard, a 2026 PGA Tour Player of the Year candidate. Other than that, Rex, you could make an argument for any of those players to be left off, whether it's J.J. Spaun, who has been certainly hit or miss after a breakout in 2025, of which he has accrued most of his President's Cup points. Justin Thomas, again, inconsistent, came back from the back issue earlier this season, has had a small sample size, has not really had a serious contention to try and win on the PGA Tour this season. Xander Schauffele has not been the same player since the rib issue at the beginning of last year. Akshay Bhatia won at Bay Hill, but again, he's a young player. He'd be a first-timer going to Medina as well. I can make an argument for any of those players to be left at home for Jackson Koivun. It's going to be up to Brant Snedeker if he's actually going to want to do so. Before we wrap up the 3M Open, Rex, did want to touch on Scotty Scheffler, who was solo second. It's the fifth runner-up appearance for Scotty Scheffler in the year of our Lord 2026. What did you make of Scotty, who will now have 2 weeks off before the FedEx Cup playoffs begin in Memphis?
I jotted down just in the notes right at the top that the end of Scotty's regular season, and everything he's accomplished this year, it was a really, really good year. I don't think it was a great year. I would say you look at his major championship season, I made the same argument. It was a good major championship season. I don't think he would call it a great major championship season. I think the regular season probably falls into that same category, because you break it down and he was phenomenal in everything he did. He finished runner-up 5 times, and so he gave himself plenty of opportunities to have more than just that one victory at the American Express, and it still seems like something is just slightly off. He clearly putted better at the 3M Open than he did at the Open Championship, and that was to be expected. We talked a lot about the idea that the greens at the Open Championship are just different. They're link-style greens. There's not as much break in them. They're usually a little bit slower than what you end up with. They weren't as firm, probably, as what guys were anticipating. So he made that bounce back, and then you look at what his signature is, the bread and butter. It's his strokes gained approach. He was 13th in the field at the 3M Open. Again, good, not great. I think that's the best way to describe or wrap up his season. And as of right now, he's not going to play any more regular season events. So we're looking at him just essentially playing 3 more events this year to sort of change that narrative. And we have this conversation a lot over the last couple of weeks. I still don't know who I would slot in to be the player of the year at this point.
Luckily, we do not have to decide at this point who will be the player of the year. As it stands right now, Scotty Scheffler is still leading the FedEx Cup standings. Cameron Young could catch him, though. He's playing this week, the Rocket Classic, and you would expect him to defend his title the following week at the Wyndham Championship as well. Obviously, with a new model in 2028 beginning, that sort of regular season crown is going to be quite meaningful. You even heard Brian Rolopp, the CEO of the PGA Tour, say that that will be among the most significant titles in all of golf, as winning the regular season title on the PGA Tour. We're not quite at that point yet, just for leading the FedEx Cup race. Yeah, as it related to 3M Open, I think that was well said. There was an 18-hole stretch with the back nine that Scotty had on Friday and the front nine that he had on Saturday that he played in two over par. You obviously cannot do that in a birdie fest, and it led to too many shots that he had to make up by shooting 127 on the weekend. Fifth runner-up finish of the season. Not all of them are created equal. This one wasn't necessarily close. The Cadillac Championship won by Cameron Young was not close, but he does have two runner-up finishes that were lost by playoff, and another one at the Masters that was by a single shot. All right, producer Fred is going to be very upset because we have blown through so many stop signs, but we do have more to get to in this show with a couple of punch shots and even some voices in the crowd. Stay with us. All right, Rex, producer Fred is apoplectic because we blew through so many stop signs. The whole rundown that we did not even have has now been torn up as we get to the end of the show. But let's continue the discussion of what happened on Sunday at the 3M with Lucas Glover, who was not a part of the title contention, but he did have a pretty viral moment where he removed his shoes on the 10th hole after making this putt. There was a lot of discussion on social media that this was some sort of silent aim point process, but you have more details on what this was actually about.
Well, and it's important to point out that Brendan DeYoung on the telecast said this was in reference to aim point, and Lucas Glover has been clear that he's not a huge fan of aim point. I think it has less to do than the actual action of aim point in as much as it has to do with pace of play. I'll get into that in a second. But I texted Lucas late in the evening after this was all over and said done with. And he texted me back, and there were some complaints about my metal spikes marking up the greens from some guys behind me. He's talking about some other PGA Tour players behind me. He said, rules officials notified me, was just trying to be silly. There's no way to not mark up soft, damp, bent grass greens. Oh, and you can also tap down spike marks under the new rules of golf that went into effect just
fair.
A few years ago.
All very fair.
And I think here are two things. One, I do think it's funny that the narrative immediately went up. This was about aim points / pace of play. And you and I both have covered Lucas Glover for a long time. And I can tell you one thing for certain. If you want to know his opinions about pace of play, just ask him. He is not going to be ambiguous about that at all. So if you think he was trying to do something subtle about pace of play, that wasn't the act at all. I think he was a little aggravated that someone complained about him marking up the greens because he is a little old school on this front. If he feels like, if you have something to tell me, if you feel like I'm doing something wrong to the greens, please just let me know. And I think that's where he was disappointed. And it did come off as a little silly, but that's Lucas.
It would have been so savage if this was in reference to his playing partner on Sunday, Max Gracerman, who I'm not even sure is an aim point enthusiast, but had he performed those sort of antics as a process of aim point, that certainly would have been something. I love the idea, Rex, of the PAC chairman getting so petty, getting so catty with some of the membership who was lashing out at him for his metal spikes. I cannot wait to see what the Lucas Glover reign of terror as PAC chairman is going to bring over the next couple of years. Let's move on to the Asian Tour, which had a bit of a surprising U-turn. If you've been following the story over the past couple of years, they have been in partnership with LIV Golf over the past couple of years, providing one of the pathways. But instead, beginning immediately, the Asian Tour is instead going to be having a partnership with the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, while providing some playing opportunities for that circuit instead. It apparently came as a surprise to LIV CEO Scott O'Neill. How significant do you think this move is as relates to the Asian Tour?
We touched on this during the roundtable on Wednesday's Golf Today. You missed it, of course, because you were up in Maine gallivanting around and eating delicious lobster, would be my guess. We'll hear more about that in a minute. Here's the headline of that was, of course, that the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, essentially stepped in and took the Asian Tour back from LIV Golf. Keep in mind, the Asian Tour has had an agreement with LIV Golf since before LIV Golf even played an event. They were part of their plans right from the beginning. They were a feeder system. They were a foothold in what you could argue was the ecosystem at the time. They were able to justify getting world ranking points for their players via that international series that a lot of LIV guys were able to play. So certainly this was another shot across the bow for the PGA Tour directed towards LIV Golf during a time when LIV Golf is facing, let's call it, headwinds. That seems to be the key word of the day. My bigger takeaway was this was a step forward in what Brian Rolapp touched on at the Travelers Championship just a few weeks ago, creating something really cool in the fall, using national opens as sort of that linchpin, that corner piece for top players. And no, not all top players are going to play in the fall. Scottie Scheffler is probably not going to play much, if at all, in the fall. But there will be a handful that don't want to sit around for one third of the year. It's worth pointing out. When they stop playing, you're going to have 4 months off. So you're taking one third of the year off. I don't think many players are going to do that. And if the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour and now the Asian Tour do this correctly, you could come up with a really cool national open stretch of 6, 7, 8 events. Going to Australia, going to Asia, going to South Korea, wherever the case may be. And that might attract the top players. And it could create a run in golf that is compelling during a time of year that normally in the United States, we don't have that. So I see this as a very good step for Brian Rolapp on that front, looking inward, only worrying about his own tour.
Especially since one of my takeaways was that LIV CEO Scott O'Neill had been targeting those national opens as being integral to what LIV Golf was going to be moving forward. And now having those stripped away, I'm thinking of Singapore, I'm thinking of Hong Kong in particular, when they're in the market for new investors and having the Asian Tour and that partnership part of that sales pitch to investors when they're looking for $400 million was certainly a hit. Second one is as it relates to the official World Golf ranking. This year, LIV Golf players have been receiving reduced points because of their tournaments, in large part because they did have this opening. They did have this avenue. They did have this promotion and relegation between these two tours. The OWGR has the opportunity at the beginning of 2027 to reevaluate LIV Golf standing as it relates to receiving world ranking points. Without this pathway that's going to be available to players, you could see a U-turn as it relates to world ranking points for players as well, which again, if you're an investor looking at LIV Golf for 2027 and beyond, that would certainly be a big hit there. As it relates to LIV Golf, Rex, 3 events remaining on the schedule, but not sure we're actually going to see all of them to completion. In fact, Martin Keimer, who's one of the team captains, said there's about a 5% chance that the team championship in Michigan goes off as scheduled. What do you make of the LIV Golf schedule as it remains in 2026 with its future very much uncertain?
I think the people on LIV Golf, and this goes from Scott O'Neill all the way down, are trying to be as optimistic as possible, trying to come up with some sort of solution that would allow them to continue to play at least into 2027. You can only imagine how difficult that is. But I think on the other front, and this is completely justifiable, there's probably a lot of players, at least, who are starting to look for exits. And I would point to Graham McDowell, pointing out that, yes, whatever happens next year and beyond, he's going to go back to the DP World Tour. He's going to look set his sights on the Champions Tour in a few years. We just saw Pat Perez. He had a great week at the Open Championship over in the UK. He clearly is setting his sights on the Senior Tour. Henrik Stenson last week had an extended conversation with him at Royal Birkdale. Could not be happier. So I think everybody on that side is coming to grips with the idea that whatever happens in 2027, you need to have a plan B, and that speaks volumes.
Yeah, it certainly seems like they're taking on water. Players looking for other opportunities on the DP World Tour, vendors not being paid, tournaments not going off. It wasn't just New Orleans, but now you're having Michigan and the $40 million team finale. That might not go off as scheduled as well. Scott O'Neill with a self-imposed September 1 deadline to take on new investment. The clock is ticking for LIV Golf's future in 2027 and beyond. All right, after this short break, we're going to have a Voices in the Crowd section. You had questions. We have answers coming up right next. All right, Rex, it's great to have some listener comments and questions back in our lives on the Made for TV program. This one from Caddy Master Looper with a very good idea. How about some body cam footage on rules officials, which would give everyone a better view and understanding of the situation like Bryson's? What do you think?
I spent so much time studying hours and hours of body cam footage from Tiger Woods' DUI arrest earlier this year. I have no interest in doing it. Can you imagine how many things we could break down from whatever it is that happened with Bryson DeChambeau and the officials when they were sort of, they went into the weeds, they went back to number 5, they talked about it for like 30 minutes. We'd still be breaking that down.
I know, but I feel like we were robbed of some sensational audio and even, I would say, some understanding, particularly since Bryson DeChambeau did not talk to reporters on the weekend or really at all during the week at Royal Birkdale. Having that audio, I think, would be invaluable to understanding what the actual issue was when the explanation, I would argue, was insufficient. Speaking of which, how about this one from G.E. Jones, a commentary of sorts, who said, why can Rory do no wrong in our eyes when Bryson gets destroyed for anything that's suspect? He's the most misunderstood man in golf. Rex, defend yourself.
Two things. One, I would agree Bryson DeChambeau is the most misunderstood man in golf. And because of that, we end up in situations like we were last week where we don't have any answers. I begged, I pleaded. I think Todd Lewis begged and pleaded for Bryson to stop and talk to us and give his side of the story. And he just refused to do that. Rory gives his side of the story. And more times than not, when you hear his side of the story, it comes across and you start to understand exactly where he's coming from. So that would be my answer.
I like to think on this show, we treat players equally, and when Rory does something boneheaded, we take him to task for it. And when Bryson does something boneheaded, we take him to task for it as well. It just so happens that Bryson DeChambeau over the past couple years has done it with more frequency than Roy McIlroy has. And again, when Bryson DeChambeau is not offering his side of the story and having an opportunity to tell his narrative, then all we can do is based on what our actions and our visuals are telling us. And in that case, Bryson is not misunderstood. He is, in fact, pretty obvious with what he is trying to do here. And this one finally, Rex, from Chris Morphus 7515, who is sort of referencing our major grades as it relates to Rory and Scotty, who said these should be more of a pass fail situation than giving a grade. What do you think?
I was actually going to steal that earlier in the show. I love this idea because it would be really easy to sit here and go, okay, Scottie Scheffler failed. He didn't win. I think a player of Scottie Scheffler's caliber, if you gave him those two options and he does not win over the course of a major championship season, he will tell you fail. Rory did win, so he passed. It's as simple as that. I love that idea. It's simple. It doesn't fill 40 minutes of a first block, though. We need 40 minutes of a first block.
My grades were right. Your grades were wrong. That's the only thing I'm hearing from those comments from Chris Morphus. I did want to, Rex, button up an issue from the Open Championship because this was me at the dentist's office. Shout out Marie, our friend, a great dentist. Last week, I had to visit Palm Valley Dentistry to get what was fixed or what needed to be fixed from the Open. I didn't just crack a crown. I actually broke off a piece of my tooth underneath said crown. So they fixed that tooth, put on a new crown. The whole ordeal will cost me about $450. Hickories in Southport, England. Ooh. Me and my lawyer are coming after.
Named names.
All right. That is going to be for this edition of Golf Joe Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back on Wednesday for a full preview of the Rocket Classic as well as the AIG Women's Open. It's been a great episode. Look forward to hearing from you guys in the YouTube comment section and anywhere else you can find us. Yes, that's at Rex Hager GC for all of his bad President's Cup takes.